Thank you for joining us today, Tiffany. We're speaking with Tiffany Ruthkup, and we're talking about her recent book published as part of the Studies in Writing and Rhetoric series titled Rhetoric of Respect, Recognizing Change at a Community Writing Center. Tiffany, I wondered if we could just start with you briefly talking about the Community Writing Center, what it is, and your time there as its founding director.
I'd be happy to, and thanks for inviting me to participate in this chat. So, the Community Writing Center at Salt Lake Community College has been around since 2001. It is a writing center for the community, and it's funded by Salt Lake Community College. While I was there, so I began working on developing that project in 1998, and then, like I said, it opened in 2001. It was at one location across the street from a homeless shelter in downtown Salt Lake City from 2001 to 2006, and then we moved to it's the campus of the main city library, which is an entire city block that has the library and lovely gardens and parks, and it's right across the street from the city county building. I stayed there till 2010, and while I was there for those for that decade or so, it had multiple programs. We had writing tutoring, which we called writing coaching, and that was for anybody to bring in any kind of writing that they were working on. We had a variety of workshops on multiple different genres of writing, and that could range from poetry to writing resumes to, let's see, what else do we do, advocacy writing, so writing to your legislators and so on. We also had a writing and publication project called the Diversity Writing Series. We had multiple writing groups that met around the valley on a regular basis, and then twice a year we would publish their work and hold public readings. And then we partnered with multiple local nonprofit organizations and governmental organizations on writing projects, of which they would design and we would come in and facilitate. We'd design them together, but it was what they wanted, not what we wanted. So that's what went on at that point. The Community Writing Center is still going, and they've still got lots of great programs. And so it's still located at the library, and people can go take a look at it if they go to www.slcc.edu/CWC.
All right, thank you. And sharing that, the history, I was really intrigued by the move that you discussed. So the move from kind of being right located in the community and the move to being more situated somewhere in the library and in the writing center. Did you see that as influencing the work at all? Because in some of the scholarship around community writing and community writing centers that I've been looking at recently, there is a lot of discussion about space and location. So did you see that move influencing either the clients that you were serving or maybe constraints at all or just the general philosophy or anything in terms of that?
Well, when we had the opportunity to move, well, we really liked the first space that we were in when we originally opened. It was exactly where we wanted to be. It was in a new mixed-use building project that was called Art Space, and that had low-income housing on the top three floors, and then the bottom floor had nonprofit organizations, an art gallery, a small cafe, and then the Community Writing Center. And it was right across the street from the shelter, so we thought that was ideal. Mm-hmm. But over time, that place became not so workable for us. And the primary reason was actually parking, because of where it was located. There was just no parking available at all whatsoever. And the community college was getting increasingly concerned about our safety there. And while we did have some incidents that were somewhat threatening from time to time, we felt comfortable there, but the community college didn't feel comfortable with us there. So we had a writing tutoring program going on at the city library, and we met with the director of the library just to see how we could improve that program, and she mentioned that they had a space opening up there. And at first we thought, yes, this was ideal. What a perfect place for us to be on the, plaza of a city library. The only hesitation that we had was that it was a very middle-class space because it is kind of it's very much the cultural center of the city at this point. I mean, it's a beautiful, new, modern architecture, and festivals and concerts go on down there all the time. But what we decided was, I mean, we needed to move, and we decided that that a place that's a public space, such as a library, would be the next best place for us to go to, because the clientele that we were serving across the street from the homeless shelter were always welcome at the public space of the library. So we decided to go for it, and I believe that it was absolutely the right decision, 100%. But it did definitely change the flavor of the Community Writing Center in multiple ways. The first way was that it was so much more visible as a location for the community college, that the college wanted to assert more control over the branding of the space. We were suddenly, we were in a very high rent district in terms of exposure for the college. So they wanted to make significant changes to our look and to the materials that we would distribute, promotional materials that we would distribute and such. Also, our clientele did change pretty dramatically over the course of the first year, definitely into the second year of being there, became much more, much more middle class. But what I mean by that is like an educated class, much, much, much more educated. And they were self-authorized to use the space as a public space and self-authorized to use the Community Writing Center to further their own mostly expressivist writing goals. And while that was good, and I had some conflicts about trying to figure out, well, if this is supposed to be the community space, we should let the community do with it what it will, I also was concerned with how it was turning into more of a writing salon. And so we had to make some changes to resist that co-optation of that space.
Thank you. That was a really, really interesting response. And I think you're hitting on some of the really important considerations you have to make or think about when you're doing this type of community writing work, you know, in terms of material constraints and also in terms of, you know, institutional realities and things like that as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I was wondering next if you could just, you know, talk a little bit about the process of writing the book, kind of how you got from doing the work at the center to writing the book and maybe the different, you know, kind of iterations or things that it went through when getting it to the nice, you know, nice shiny hard copy that I have in front of me now.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny because I think the first line in the book is, this is not the book that I intended to write or something like that.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And I know that's a little cliched, but it was absolutely true. So in about 2008, I'd been doing the Writing Center for over a decade by that point in terms of developing it and directing it. And it was time to start writing about it. I mean, I'd written some articles that had appeared here and there, but it was time to put together a book-length project on it because I knew it was really important. And I wanted this book idea that I could potentially put together to reflect the collaborative discourses that existed at the Community Writing Center. So I wanted to write it from a multi-voiced perspective. So in doing that, I tried to collect language and writing from people who worked there, from people who were writers there, from people at the college, and then I would try to stitch it together as some kind of a collage. And I quickly learned that I was not skilled enough to do that and have it be something that was cohesive enough to make an argument as well. So in 2008, the then assistant director, Melissa Hellquist, and I set about to write a book collaboratively about it, to co-author a book. And we didn't get very good reception from publishers. We attended the Four Seas Conference and shopped it around, and people at that time just weren't interested in a book about community writing centers. It was kind of on the leading edge of the community literacy movement, and they just said, you know, there wasn't enough of an audience. And then she moved, so it was back to me trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I decided I wanted to write something that could reach across academic and non-academic discourses. But I also quickly learned that I wasn't well known enough. I didn't have enough credibility within the academic field of composition to be able to pull something like that off, like something like Mike Rose could do. So I had to prove myself as an academic scholar first before I would move to something that could cross audiences. So then I realized, okay, I've got to write an academic book. And that was a little depressing for me to have it move in that direction, because it felt like it was somehow turning my back on what the Community Writing Center had done. But I tried a couple presses before Studies of Writing and Rhetoric, but they said that it was too narrow of a topic for them. So I took it to Studies in Writing and Rhetoric, and Victor Villanueva really liked it. And then, so I just wrote basically for an entire year of, this was right after I left in 2010. I just wrote for that year about all the experiences that I could remember. And I just basically, I think I filled like 300 or 400 pages of material. And then I tried to find some kind of a thread through it. And I thought I had found a thread running it all together, but I didn't, because when I sent it to Studies in Writing and Rhetoric, they liked it. They were very interested in it, but they did also ask me, you know, what was my point? Because I didn't really have a point. So Ellen Cushman and Mary Soliday really helped me frame the book and help it find a solid argument and solid theoretical focus, which I took through eco-composition theory. And that, it was surprising because I'd heard of eco-composition theory, but I didn't really know much about it, because I thought it was all just about aligning, you know, composition with like environmental conservation efforts. But when I started reading into it, I found, wow, this is exactly how I've been thinking about the Community Writing Center the whole time, as an organic space that developed, you know, in its own way, developed its own discourses. It was like a living, breathing project. And it really helped me kind of streamline what I was doing for the book and help me find a way through it.
Mm-hmm. And that's really interesting, because I think that one of the really big accomplishments of the text is this kind of really nice balance between this idea of rhetoric of respect and the actual real work that's going on in the Community Writing Center and the value that it can communicate to those of us, you know, either not involved in that work or, like you said, even those of us outside of academia. You mentioned this idea of eco-composition. Is eco-comp where you kind of found this idea, or you came to this idea of the rhetoric of respect?
No. I came up with that. It's very funny, because now I have this term, rhetoric of respect, which is almost, you know, like a little mini theory. And it's so funny, because it's like it's aligned with me now, and people ask me about like how I would define a rhetoric of respect, and, you know, what would that look like in these certain conversations. And that term, I probably shouldn't admit this in public, but I'm going to, because I have no shame. That term actually came out in a frustrated email I sent to my colleague Stephen Rufus when I was trying to find a focus for this book. And it was after I'd had the responses from from Ellen Cushman and Mary Soliday, and I didn't really know where to go with it. And so I wrote to Stephen, you know, I don't know, you know, how to find a focus point for this book, because the Community Writing Center there's so much in it. I mean, there's new literacy studies, and there's critical democratic pedagogies, and there's community literacy work, and it's just all over the place. And I remember writing, you know, in the end, what it's about is a rhetoric of respect for the people who come there and believing that they know more about what they need than what we do. And then I think I started reworking the book after I'd written that, and I thought, yeah, that rhetoric of respect is what actually framed everything that we did there. But it's like the theory, the name of the theory formed upon reflection of all the work and theorizing that we had done, and it just summed it up very nicely and neatly. So that's why when I get asked about it, like, how did you use a rhetoric of respect, it's sometimes funny to me, because at the time I wouldn't have named it as such. We were just doing it. But in hindsight, it's a perfect description of what we did. And in some ways I also kind of like that, because it reflects our general approach to the work that we did there, because instead of taking a theory, you know, that may have been developed in an academic discourse and applying it to work with the community, the work, the theory developed out of that work. And so we didn't have a lens of academic expertise or academic knowledge that needed to exist before we did that work, if I'm hoping this makes some sense. So the work was So the work was more organic and collaborative and very partnership based, rather than being informed by something that we had created external to that partnership building. I hope that makes sense.
No, it absolutely makes sense, and I think that it's really speaking to this. It seems a much more ethical, transparent, natural, and generative process in terms of letting the kind of, you know, the issues of the, not problems, but the issue itself, then your response to it in the theory kind of naturally building from that. So no, and I think that also speaks to one of my next questions, because in the book you identify one of the primary aims and values of the Community Writing Center as being able to disrupt the division between the community and the university, and then, and if it's okay to quote you, kind of this idea of, I think you say, deroutinize the flow of literacy education and the academy. And I wonder if you could just speak a little bit more about why you see that type of work and that type of blurring between the boundaries between the community and the university as important.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, so I think with that, I think it's really, really easy for people who work in higher education, even people who whose life work is that of scholarly activism, to forget that we are just one of many discourses that make up our communities. I think, you know, because of the way that our educational ideologies frame the ways that we exist in this world, we gain a certain privilege and respect, or holding ourselves up as being more knowledgeable, being more that our ideas are more valuable than those with whom we work, even though scholars who are working with community members, they're absolutely and 100% intending to honor those voices and those discourses that are brought from community members. I think it's all too easy to slip back into our ideological roles, because of just the way that we understand how expertise works in the world. It's safer and it's easier for us to continue with that discursive flow of the university or the higher education institution bringing something to the community that the community needs or wants, rather than seeing ourselves as just one of many. And you see this play out obviously in the college, in the educational environments as well, which are all based on relationships of expertise, where the teacher comes in and has the knowledge to share with the students, even if that's done through a critical democratic process where you're trying to disrupt it. It's still so, so, so difficult to break out of that on a regular basis. Like, people can like poke holes in it and can make temporary change with it, but they can't do it's, I think it's almost impossible to do long-term change as long as you remain in the roles. And so, let me see where I'm going with this. So to deroutinize that or to disrupt that doesn't mean that it changes it, because I don't think that there's much that can be done to permanently change that discursive flow. The system is much too big and too powerful for that. But to deroutinize it or to disrupt it, at least momentarily, it makes it visible, and then we can question how we do this kind of work ethically, to kind of keep reminding ourselves that we do it ethically. There were many, many times that the Community Writing Center fell into that discursive flow of making assumptions that we knew what a community organization might want or what an individual might want. And that's what I talk about in the book a lot, is how we screwed up so many times. But by deroutinizing it and by disrupting it, we would have moments of reflection of saying, okay, now why are we doing this? How are we doing this? Are we doing it in the way that we are externally claiming that we are doing this? Or are we accidentally falling back into what's most comfortable for all parties? I think it's often more comfortable for community members or community organizations as well to have higher education say what they can do and what they can't do, or, you know, to kind of drive the terms of the process. But it's interesting, and I hope I'm not going too long on this part, on this point, but I think that higher education representatives often don't recognize that when we stay in this mode of this discursive flow where it's coming from higher ed to community members, what we're ending up doing is we end up not building real and true partnerships, and we end up continuing the divisions. I went on way too long for that.
No, not at all. And I think that it really does speak to one of the true values of the text, and I think it speaks to the different audiences that you're reaching, but I think it also speaks to the importance of transparency about the work, but not just about the work, but about the kind of political nature of the work and how, without kind of wrestling with that and engaging that, how reciprocity is so difficult. I think that the points you're raising are really, really, really important ones. But it also relates to my next question, and to be a little, you know, self-serving, I'm a new scholar in the field, and I know that interest in community writing work. And my question would be what your advice would be for new scholars like myself, or graduate students, or administrators, or people in the field, in academia, that are in excited by this work and want to get engaged in it. You know, what would your kind of biggest piece of advice, or you know, what should we not forget?
Okay. Well, I think there's probably two things. So my first thing is pretty, it's just practical. One is just to start small. a lot of times I talk with people about the Community Writing Center, and it's like they want to just create a Community Writing Center. And it's very difficult to, like, I don't want to, you know, shut anybody down, but I need people to understand that that project took form over the course of a decade. I mean, it took 3 years to just get it off the ground, and then the first 5 years of operation were very hit and miss, and it wasn't anything like it is today. So I think that people starting small is extremely important, because particularly if we're working with people outside of the privileged space of the academy, people, you know, whose real lives we're affecting, I think that it's crucial that we succeed in the projects that we're working on. I think there's nothing worse to do than to promise more than what we can do. And so to be really, really smart and very, I guess, brutal with ourselves to acknowledge what our limitations are, to say, okay, I can dedicate this much time to this project, and here's what we can do. And while the outcomes of it might seem to be, I don't know, minuscule in comparison to what we want to accomplish, to be able to accomplish those very small things sets a basis for building trust, building relationships, and building more successes. So that's my very, very practical advice, is to start as small as you possibly can so that you can have a success that you can build a relationship on, and build a relationship and build a reputation for being somebody who can be trusted, and to come through on what they're doing. My second piece of advice is, it's going to sound a little odd, I think. but from my perspective, I think my second piece of advice is to ask yourself why you're doing this work. And because I think there's a lot of motivation to do this kind of work because it makes people feel good about themselves. It's that kind of, I mean, we all want to, we all, you know, there is definite value in giving and service. I mean, we feel good about ourselves when we're serving others. We feel good about ourselves when we're giving of our time. And there's definite value of that. But I also think that there has to be a payoff for you beyond that feeling good about yourself or feeling like you're helping somebody else, because you have to sustain your own self and your own work. And so in some ways, I would say to ask yourself the question, are you doing it to feel good about yourself? Or are you doing it for the good of others? Or are you doing it for yourself? And so I think that community literacy work, for it to be sustainable, needs to be a very selfish project. And that's what I think sounds odd. Because if you're not doing this work for yourself, then it will never last, because we are human beings and we get so busy and we are pulled in so many different directions, that if it's not fulfilling you and your needs, then you're setting up the potential for harm, because if others become to rely on the work that you're doing, or if your work is set up to benefit others in some way and you can't come through, then that's more harm than having not done anything at all. So does that make sense?
Yes, and I think it's incredibly helpful, because I think it does just go back to the point that you make in the book several times that you've come back to in our discussion today, is the importance of transparency and really embracing your own positionality and being kind of mindful of that while you're dealing with others, because, you know, these are people that are coming from very different mindsets than our own. So, no, I absolutely think that's helpful. And before we kind of conclude our talk, I was wondering if there is some community writing work that you've been doing since the center that you're doing now that you'd like to talk about, or stuff that you're hoping to get involved with in the future.
Well, I'm still involved in community writing work here in Salt Lake, but it's purely on a personal basis now. Just through my own volunteer work. Like, I've helped a high school develop a writing center, and I'm working on some writing across the curriculum stuff with another high school and doing stuff with schools. But here in Salt Lake, the community writing and service learning work is pretty much saturated, because we've got the community writing center, the University of Utah and liberal arts college here named Westminster, and Salt Lake Community College all have really robust service learning programs. Westminster College has its own community literacy center, and this is all in the, you know, in the size of Salt Lake City is only 150,000, but our urban area is probably about 500,000. And so there's always more work to do, but institutionally wise, there's really no space for me to do institutional work right now in community writing. So that's why I just do it on my own. But I am developing a program. I'm in my second year of it, of taking a WAC initiative, so Writing Across the Curriculum initiative, and doing it with a community writing, community literacy spin on it here at the community college. And I'm calling it Writing Across the College, but its aim is to treat the college as a community in and of itself and look at how writing impacts everybody, so not just student writing. So I'm developing programs to support students, but also I'm developing programs for faculty and for staff members and for administrators. And it's been a really interesting project in the very beginnings of it. I started out with a bunch of research to ascertain the ecology of the ecosystems of Salt Lake Community College as it has to do with writing. And this year I started put together a few programs, and it's growing slowly, but it doesn't look like a standard WAC program by any means yet. So we'll just see where that goes.
Well, that sounds incredibly exciting.
It's pretty fun.
I hope that we get to hear more about that in the future. Tony, is there anything else that you'd like to mention before we conclude?
The only thing I guess I would mention is, if anybody who listens to this, if they've made their way through it, and if I'm always open for questions and conversations and chats. I remember getting great support from colleagues as I was doing this work, and now it's my turn to help anybody out in any way I can. People can reach me. My email and everything is on the SLCC website. They can also reach me. This is a very easy email. It's just WAC@slcc.edu. They can reach me that way, or they can look at the Writing Across the College website, which is www.slcc.edu/WAC. And I'm always happy to talk with people.
Well, thank you again. And it's been such a pleasure to talk with you and learn more about it. It's really valuable work that you're doing, and you're talking about in the book, and it sounds like that you're continuing to do in the future. So
thank you so much
again for your time. Yeah, you
thank
have a wonderful
you.
Day.
You too. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.